This is a man's world, but we won't quit. This is a man's world. She who dares wins.
Hello and welcome to this episode of This is a Man's World, She Who Dares Wins. This week my guest is Ellie Hart. She's an Aussie based in Vancouver, and Ellie is a carpenter. She has a huge following on Instagram, and the reason why is because she documents her journey from being an apprentice carpenter to now a fully fledged carpenter on Instagram, and gives us an in-depth look at her life on site and the role that she plays, and also the journey that she's taken to become qualified. I have been a long-standing fan of Ellie's Instagram and obviously her work. She's really inspiring, and I am very much looking forward to this podcast. Now, before we jump into the interview, Ellie's interview was a little bit different from most. It was amazing, but she also asked me some questions before we started, as she was generally intrigued into my world and my journey in construction. So what I've done for all of you out there that know my journey, I've left that out of today's podcast, but I thought it was a nice little special thing for all you Patreon subscribers out there, everyone that helps donate a little bit of money towards this podcast. It's just a dollar a month, and I'm going to put this out as some special content for you guys. So on the show notes, there's a link to the Patreon account, and if you sign up for that, or if you have already signed up for that, you're going to get this great, I think it's about 5 to 8 minute slot of us having a chat and her asking me some questions as a little bit of a bonus. All right, now let's get started and jump right into the interview. So I came across, you were actually one of the first women that I came across on Instagram, and I was like, wow, you're really putting the time into the Instagram, and I loved your feed, loved your stories as well. And then I kind of went to your bio and I was like, oh, so she's an Aussie in Canada, and then you used to be in journalism. So how did an Aussie end up in Canada, and how did you make the switch, and why, from journalism to being a trainee carpenter?
I ended up in Canada because of a boy.
Okay, didn't see that one coming.
I met a French Canadian dude in Sydney, and he ended up looking for work here in Vancouver. Because he works in film, actually, and the work over there dried up for him. So he accepted a job in Vancouver, and I was just like, you know what, I'll come with you.
Nice.
So I ended up leaving Sydney and following him here to Vancouver. And we were like, oh, we'll probably end up just staying for a year or two. And it ended up being 7 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, at the time I had no – I wasn't even aware that I would ever end up working in construction. So when I left Sydney and moved to Vancouver with him, my employer at the time offered to let me bring my job with me here, which was awesome because I was a little really anxious about trying to find a job in a new country and not knowing if any of my experience would carry over.
Mm-hmm.
So for 3 years I did that. I worked from home in front of a computer. And I became really disillusioned with the whole situation. It's really hard to write for an audience when you're in a different country. So trying to keep up was really tough. And I started feeling restless. And to distract myself, I ended up taking on, I don't even know how it came about, but I ended up doing little, like, fix it jobs around the house, and then which eventually turned into making things out of wood. Like I would make little toys out of wood.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on this like spree of just kind of setting up pools and buying all kinds of wood just to experiment with. And I turned the den at our place into a workshop, much to my boyfriend's dismay. I set up this dust tent and took over the whole second half of the top story. So yeah, that's kind of where it all started.
What's interesting is that a lot of women that I speak to fall into the, I mean, I did, I fell into a job with someone that just mentioned it to me, and I was like, oh, I'll give that a go. But yeah, and no one kind of from the start has ever said to me, oh, I've always wanted to do this, which is really interesting. But for you, that transition, yeah, that transition was, you know, just something you just started playing around with and then became a hobby. And then I guess led into to you moving into taking on the apprenticeship.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So when I eventually I was like, well, why couldn't I do this full time? Why couldn't I actually make a living out of this? So when I looked into it, I was really happy to see that there were options for apprenticeships in Vancouver and in Canada in general. I think the trades programs I've come to learn is actually really amazing. And when I looked into doing, what I had initially looked into was joinery, because what I was fascinated with was like building things in a workshop, not so much building houses. Like that all kind of came later. But when I looked into it, I realized that in terms of gainful employment, carpentry was probably the better just like path to go down. At the time in my head, I thought, well, if I did carpentry, I could probably do joinery. But if I did joinery, I don't think I could do carpentry. I thought that the skills weren't necessarily transferable in both directions. I realize now that joinery is a whole other beast on its own. Just because you have a carpentry background doesn't necessarily mean you can just jump into joinery and start making furniture.
Right.
The tolerances is totally different. And I think it was actually the better decision for me, because I honestly don't think I would have the patience to stick it out in joinery for that long.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's really, and was it easy when I do hear that Canada seems to be quite far ahead in terms of apprenticeships and processes to get people into trades. Were you nervous about going into it? Did you ever think about being a woman and going on? Did you ever have any fear that you know, it might not be the route for you, or did you just go in and think, I'll just give it a crack?
Oh, absolutely. The biggest obstacle for me was, like you said, the lack of role models, female role models, visible female role models anyway. At the time, I wasn't on Instagram, so I didn't really know anybody in the trades. Anytime I'd walk past a construction site, I'd just see guys with hard hats doing a lot of physical work.
Mm.
And so it made me wonder, like, is there a reason why there are so few women visible in the trades? Maybe I'm kidding myself into thinking that I can work in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
So I ummed and ahed over it for quite a while. But in the end, I was like, you know what? What's the worst that could happen? So I ended up doing the pre-apprenticeship program. They call it the Foundations Program here, which covers both level one and level two of the technical training and gives you 450 hours of work-based hours. And I'm really glad that option was available, because to me, the thought of going around, I mean, in what other industry do you still go around knocking on doors, asking for jobs? It's just unheard of.
Yeah.
But that was really the only way to get your foot in the door otherwise, was to go around and hopefully meet someone that you know, mm-hmm. who can get you into a job, or literally go around to job sites, knocking on doors, asking for a chance. And to me, that was really intimidating. So the pre-apprenticeship program was how I got my foot in the door. And it gave me an idea of what to expect on the job. And it's for anyone who's interested and doesn't want to go down the route of, you know, knocking on doors and trying to meet people who are already in the industry, that's probably the best way to go. You get an idea of what to expect when you get on the job site, and you become familiar with some of the tools and the culture along the way. So I think the fact that that option is available is really awesome. I don't know if that's something that is unique to Canada. Like, how does it work in the UK?
Yeah, you guys have? I'm just thinking now, I'm not entirely sure, because, I mean, we have apprenticeships, but as far as I know, from the engineering side of things, you come out of university and you've got a graduate job. And then if you don't decide to go to university, you can take on an apprenticeship.
Right.
But you're pretty much thrown straight into it. So day one, you're on site, and I think you do 4 days on site, 1 day in college. I'm sure listeners out there will.
I think it's similar in Australia. actually, where they have, like, you work for, like, 4 days out of the week, and then one day you go to TAFE or wherever the training is being done.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
here in Canada, or at least here in BC, it's the apprenticeship works as a 7-week course. So you go for 7 weeks full time out of the year, and then the rest of the year you're on the job site. So
okay.
Your employers have to let you go for 7 weeks out of each year to go to school and get it done. So okay. Yeah.
That's cool. And how did you find when you started, how did you find, like, attitudes towards you, and how did you generally find the course? Did you find it easy, hard, or?
The actual technical training component I found pretty difficult. The first thing they jump into is, I think it's changed a little bit now since I did it, but it was formwork. And I had never heard of formwork before. Concrete formwork just completely blew my mind, because everything's in reverse.
Right.
Like, you're building something that you then later need to take apart. And yeah. I had a really hard time wrapping my mind around that. But the fact that you start with something that is difficult kind of makes you think outside the box a little bit, and it made me certainly aware that it isn't what I thought it would be. So once I got past the initial formwork stage of the program, and then we went to the framing side of things, it sort of started to click a little more. But I think it's one of those things where you have to try it.
Yeah.
To really know for sure. And I know here they have this, like, program specifically for women where you get to try all the different trades and considered it.
Wow.
Yeah. So
okay.
I think it's like you rotate 1 week at a time. You do electrical, then you try plumbing, and then you try welding and carpentry. And the reason why I ended up not doing that was because I knew I did not want to do electrical or plumbing or welding. Okay. I wanted specifically to work with wood.
Yeah, I mean, that is such a great initiative, because you wouldn't know. You have no idea what you can turn your hand to or what you would like. And I think that's half the problem with getting women into the industry, is that if you sign up to an apprenticeship here, you have to make a decision, and then you're in that for 2 or 3 years. And it's only when you get on site that you see other trades and you think, oh, you know, maybe I would like to do that. Or maybe, I mean, I've tried numerous things whilst being on site. I've tried driving machines. I've tried a little bit of bricklaying, and it's been great. It's been great fun. But the reality is, I'm not sure that we have anything over here that allows that. So that is really, you Canadians, well, you can say you're an Aussie, but you guys are pretty good as well. It's so forward thinking.
Yeah.
And it's really positive to learn about these programs, because I'm hoping that, you know, that will cross the pond into here, and Europe will follow as well. I'm not sure if Europe do the same as well. This whole idea behind the podcast is I'm learning as I go along. But yeah, that's amazing that's open to them.
If I had stayed in Australia, I don't think I would have ever ended up in the trades.
Right, okay.
It's different in Australia. Here I felt, here it just seemed like the people were more tolerant of different types of people working in the trades. I mean, yeah, you still kind of get the attitude every now and then, but in Australia I felt that it was a total no-go zone for me.
Right.
My dad really discouraged me from, because when I told him what I wanted to do, he's worked in the trades all his life, and he was really, I guess he was kind of scared for me.
Yeah.
And he tried to discourage me. He's like, you know, the work is really hard. You got to deal with a lot of shitty people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be easy. He's just, are you sure this is what you want to do? And in a way, it kind of made me even more determined to give it a go, just to see if it really was as bad as my dad had feared.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up knowing that my dad had a hard time often on the job site. But here I can honestly say that my experience has not been his experience.
Oh, okay.
I felt that from the beginning, like, I kind of mitigated a lot of the variables from the start. I specifically looked for a job with a small company where I wasn't going to be thrown in with, like, 100 other guys.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like that was the most sensible way to kind of start off in the industry. And then I kind of, as I gained more confidence and became more familiar with the kind of culture in the trades, I sort of opened up my mind to working in different types of, working on different types of job sites. But definitely at the start, working for a small residential company helped take some of that fear away mm-hmm. and some of the anxiety around not knowing what you're getting yourself into.
A lot of the younger girls that I speak to, they talk about, you know, being worried about going onto big projects and having to deal with, you know, being the only woman on site. And looking back over the years, I've always been a freelance engineer, so I've never actually been employed full time with a company. It's just the way things have worked. But I have, once I've got in with a smaller company, I've actually stayed the longest with smaller companies because you get to know your colleagues, they look out for you if needed. And it is, I think, a slightly easier way in. But then recently got me thinking about, you know, working for small businesses and small companies as to whether they don't have certain things in place to deal with attitudes, if you get what I mean. So a lot of the things that were happening to me when I worked for smaller companies, things that wouldn't be put up with when you go and work on a larger project, because the larger companies, you know, they have a reputation to protect, they have certain yeah. things, certain procedures that, you know, you can make complaints, they have a HR department. So it's really interesting to me because I felt more comfortable with smaller companies, but then when there has been an issue, I know perhaps I might have been looked after better on a larger project. So that I'm really torn with this, but from what you say, yeah. it's been a good experience working for a small company at the start.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think maybe I'm a little, my opinion's been skewed a little bit by what I've heard mm-hmm. over the years. What I've heard is that the bigger companies won't necessarily look after you. You're the HR department is interested in looking after the company, not so much you as the individual working there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the kind of jaded view of it anyway. Yeah. And the biggest company that I have worked for is, you know, the company that I'm working for now, where the core crew is maybe, you know, 10 guys at most.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there was one time when I did have a confrontation with a coworker, mm-hmm. and the way that it was dealt with was to my satisfaction, and I think that the right decisions were made. He ended up being moved to a different job site, mm-hmm. but they didn't fire him, and I don't think it was necessarily an issue that required someone having to be let go.
Right.
But their way of saying that wasn't okay was to have him be moved to a different job site. And I was happy that arrangement came about because I felt unsafe at work working with him
right.
for weeks prior to that incident. And, I mean, this is the thing about the trades is they're so strapped for good, reliable workers that they have a hard time letting people go even if they do something that, you know, is a breach of policy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a fear factor, and that's really good to hear that story, because I've recently spoken to another tradeswoman who's jumped on the podcast as well. And instead of, she had a situation and instead of moving the guy, they moved her. And so then that just spins a whole other direction on things because it makes almost you part of the problem when it's not being you at all, it's been, you know, this other person. So that's really yeah. positive to hear that. And like you say, we have it in the UK. I work with guys who are not only inappropriate at work, and I say the word inappropriate, I don't mean towards me, I just mean in their actions and what they do, health and safety yeah. wise, work wise, and also, you know, incompetence. And they don't get moved to other jobs because we are desperate in the UK for everyone in a trade and everyone in construction. So crazily enough, these people stay on site. And it is interesting when things happen to you because yeah, I've reported things over the years, and being freelance, it doesn't give me any weight, because it's like, well, you can go and get a job tomorrow elsewhere. So yeah. For me, I've never even, you know, I've made a complaint because I think people have to know, but when it comes down to tackling the problem, it's never been anything formal like you've experienced. So that is really positive to hear.
I mean, the few times that I've spoken to other women, you know, just about, you know, how do you feel about working in the trades? What's your perception of work in the trades as a woman? Mm-hmm. And the fear of jumping into the trades totally comes from these stereotypes, these generational ideas that trades are not fit for a woman.
Correct.
And that's the only reason why. And that's kind of part of my journey as well, is to kind of bust some of those myths as to what it's like. Yes, some of it is true, but a lot of it is false. And I think a lot of the parts that are false kind of carry this disproportionate amount of weight on the decisions that get made. So I see, you know, a lot of people who are curious, they want to know what it's like, but they would never actually consider it for themselves because they have these ideas of what it might be like. And, you know, it's kind of sad to think that we're missing out on potentially really awesome talent because of these outdated ideas about what it's like to work in the trades.
Yeah, and that's where I find things really difficult with sharing my stories and also with this podcast, is that, you know, I'm passionate about telling the real story, but I'm also conscious of the fact that, you know, if I discuss anything that's happened on site to me or anyone else and difficult issues that tackle being a woman in construction, I'm always quick to respond with, don't let that put you off, because it, you know, I'd say I'm going to go with 85% of my time on site is incredible, and I love and I'm passionate about the work that I do, and the whole reason for starting this is to get more women into construction. So
absolutely,
the small little,
I would agree with you there.
Yeah, and the small little nuggets of, you know, I've had to deal with this, had to deal with that, that's the truth. But the other side of the truth is that, like you say, you know, it is a great career to have. And actually, you know, 5 days of the week for months on end until something does happen, it's great. And the guys I work with are great. And I wouldn't be doing the job, and I wouldn't have done the job for 12 years if I didn't feel that way. And exactly what you said, that there needs to be more women in the industry. It's just about trying to let them know that it's not always an easy ride, but it doesn't mean they don't deserve to be there, and doesn't mean that they can't do the job. So you've hit the nail on the head there, excuse the pun.
It's a catch-22. It's sort of like, you know, you want to see more women in the trades, but you need more women in the trades to get more women in the trades.
And it's about
stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Exactly, and it's about educating those, not necessarily each other, but it's about educating those that run the businesses that are in government, and just saying, look, these are the issues that still exist. These need tackling whilst we do this massive drive to also get women in. And, you know, in hopefully less than 10 or 20 years time, we won't be even talking about this because it won't be unusual.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah, so much so. I mean, when I had a picture of me pregnant on site went viral in the national and actually international newspapers picked up on it. And
I remember seeing that,
yeah. Yeah, it went crazy. And I was like, someone said to me, what do you wish for? And I was like, well, I wish that in 20 years' time, a picture of a pregnant woman on a construction site isn't such a, you know, a novel thing. But the reality is, at the moment, just a woman on a construction site is still novel.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the attitudes, at least in my experience, are changing a little bit. You know, there are certainly people will turn their heads when they see a woman in a hard hat on the job site carrying tools and lumber around. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when they get to know you, when they come to the job site every day for weeks on end, that novelty definitely goes away. They can see that you're not just there as a token girl on site. They can see that you're being treated the same way as every other guy on the crew. There's no difference in terms of the kind of work that you do.
Yeah.
And I think that's how you earn the respect from that the guys would get automatically at the start. As a woman, you have to earn it. You have to go that extra step.
Yeah.
You know, as much as you hate to think that that's how it is, that is how it is. I feel like I need to work harder to prove myself.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that in 20 years' time that won't be the case as well.
Yeah, it's a viewpoint that so many of my guests have had on this podcast, is that, yeah, you have to prove yourself. And it is just a reality at this point in time. Until we change the figures, that's what we have to do.
But
it is a bit of a challenge. And, it's one of those things that you have to get your head down. But once you do prove yourself in the job and you do work and they see that you're doing, you know, just as good job as a guy could do, the respect is given as far as I've ever had.
Hands down, absolutely. Yeah. I've never had any issues with anyone who's, you know, come on the job site and refused to work with me or anything like that. The only one time that I ever had an issue was with someone who was threatened by the idea of a woman being able to do the same job that he could.
Yeah, oh, I've had that one, yeah.
Yeah, that was it. And in the end, he apologized for it. And
wow.
He knew that he had, you know, stepped out of line there. So,
yeah,
it all kind of resolved in a way that made sense, at least in my mind.
Yeah, and that's interesting, like the fear point from guys that are, especially the older generation that have done the work for so long. I guess that even though they're just one of us that turns up on a site, they all of a sudden think that, you know, women are going to take over and take all their jobs. So far from the reality.
Yeah. It's really funny like that, you know. It's like people are so desperate for workers who are passionate about the work. It's not just a job for them. And at the same time, they want to pick and choose who they want coming in to work with them. It's like, beggars can't be choosers at this point. You know, we have a massive image problem in the trades.
Mm-hmm.
If you are going to get someone on the job site who's willing to do the work, you know, you got to treat them fairly. Otherwise, you're just going to have the same problem come up over and over and over again.
Exactly. And the one thing, just going back to your Instagram post, I feel like you really do take people on a journey, because you post the technical stuff. Like, I feel like I've been on the apprenticeship with you. And does that
come? Well, that's great. It's sort of the intention.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why you've got quite a large male following, is because it you really put the effort into the work. You know, there's no glamorizing it. It is your daily work on site, you know, doing the measurements, coming across the problems, you know, tackling those problems. It's almost like you've done a blueprint for someone coming into the trade to learn from your experience. And that is incredible. It's something actually, it's quite unique to you. I see other women, other Instagrammers out there putting together stories, but it includes, you know, other things, whereas yours is hardline, your experience on site and the work you do. And you must be, and I see it, incredibly passionate about the work. Have you ever lost that passion, or is it, you know, do you still have it to this day, and that's how you continue? Is this the job for you?
The job has definitely changed for me over the last, I would say, 12 to 18 months. The passion in the beginning was like, everything is so new and shiny and wow, I'm so, you know, so cool to be trying all this out. That's sort of where the passion started with at the beginning. And then as time went on, that passion turned into a fascination with the technical side of building. Building homes for people is not easy. There is so much involved, and I think a lot of people take it for granted that, oh, yeah, you just, you know, banging 2x4s together. No, there is so much involved. There is a lot of technical factors that are outside of your control. And at the end of the day, as carpenters, what we do is build according to the plan, with very little room to manipulate around what's set out as designed.
Right.
So that's the part that I found really interesting, is that, like, what do we have control over as the site carpenters, as the developer, and what do we not have control over? Where do you draw the line in terms of, you know, making decisions about things that need to be changed?
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of like, over the last 12 months or so, I've become more aware of that part of the building process. And so that's that's been a really fascinating journey for me, is seeing how it all comes together. It really is like a puzzle. You rely on so many different people to have it all come together. Mm-hmm. And it's just been like it just blows my mind how it really does come together. But you have such a small role to play in that, even though you are on the job site every day and seeing it all happen. So that part of the process is something that has really caught my interest. Mm-hmm. And I try to put that into my writing. And at the same time, I'm aware that these are the things that I did not know about before I entered the trades and that I was worried about. Like, I had no idea what it was actually like to go through an apprenticeship and be in the trades and go through that whole process. That's the part that had me worried before I started the apprenticeship. So by sharing some of that information, kind of giving a little bit of insight as to what it actually is like day to day, hopefully it would take some of that fear away for others who may be interested. Not trying to say that my experience will be everybody's experience, but it kind of, you know, gives a little bit of an idea as to what one might expect on the job site and to go through the apprenticeship at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you did that really well. Howdy, folks. I hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. I just want to say thanks for listening. And if you did want to support the podcast, then you may consider heading over to a Patreon account where, for less than the price of a coffee a month, you can get yourself some extra goodies from this super, super podcast. And you will also be supporting the podcast for future episodes. Thanks for listening. Touched on something there regarding, you know, being in awe of building houses and, you know, all the trades come together and you do feel like a small part, and then you look back and there's huge sense of pride in the project. But the one thing that I would say is I stepped into project management for 12 months and built a retail park with some fast food outlets, and the one thing that almost crippled me, but at the same time I had a great sense of pride, was having to manage subcontractors. You know, right?
Oh God.
And it's crazy because you go from my past experience before I went into project management, it was just right, get everything up to foundation and get the structure built, whether it be steel or whatever, and then leave the job. We leave the job and all the trades come in. But then when I stepped into the project management, it was like, right, you're going from start to finish. And once the engineering side of things have done, you've then got to make sure the electricians come in, the guys putting in the plumbing work come in, and that everyone is on a timeline and everyone's done the right work. So that when,
yes.
And it's crazy because I'd have a plumber come in and say, well, we've come today, we've only got today and tomorrow in the schedule, and the pipes that you guys have put in are in the wrong place. And I'm like, poof. Like it's literally, and I think
totally feel you. Yeah.
Yeah, it
that is the reality.
It's great. Yeah, and it's great. And it actually it's probably more nerve-wracking than any Hollywood story out there, because you've got, yes, people shouting at you, you've got different personality types, and it really interests me, actually, that...
Me too. You're dead on there. Yeah. I totally agree.
And the skill set of a woman, sometimes I sit back and I think, you know what, we manage a lot when it comes to home life and you know, what we can go through in life and managing different things. And we do have a skill set that I do think belongs in construction. Not everyone, I'm not the most organised person, don't get me wrong, but I do think that we definitely have parts to play, whether it be in a trade, management, project management. And I'm really interested in you know, if we put 50-50, or even if we had a split site and it was one was purely run by women, one was purely run by guys, I wondered where, you know, skill sets would lie. I'd love to do that as an experiment.
You know what? I'd be keen to see how that experiment would turn out too. I totally know what you mean. Like, towards the end of the last job that I did, my project manager was definitely pushing me into trying to understand the job that he does on a day-to-day basis in greater detail. And I think part of that is so that when he goes away, he has someone who can look after the job site, you know? And it's something that kind of naturally ended up, he sort of pushed me naturally in that position. But at the same time, he's aware that I really just want to be on the tools. I really don't want to deal with all the bullshit that comes with working with all the other trades and all that. But I didn't say no, because I think that's an important part of the job.
Yes.
When you are the site carpenter, you often do end up being put in the project management or superintendent position simply because you have to be aware of all the other trades and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, if you're the plumber that comes on site, you don't necessarily know what anybody else is doing. So, you know, I can see sort of why you would need to kind of be at least, at the very least, aware of what goes on in that kind of position.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I didn't say no to taking on the extra task. And I learned a heck of a lot just in the last 3 months of that job, sort of taking on tasks that he would normally take on, managing some of the other trades and trying to get them all to play nice with each other.
Yeah.
It was a shit show. It was so difficult because, like you said, you're dealing with so many different personalities.
Yeah.
You have no control over how they choose to do their work,
when
they choose to come in, when they choose to come back or not. And it can be really frustrating.
Yeah. And throw into that, I was pregnant the whole time I took out of that project from start to finish.
Oh my goodness.
My hormones were all over the place. I think I remember screaming at a lorry driver once when he turned up on site to deliver a load of steel that wasn't due. And I remember thinking, what have you done? But the one thing I would say, Ellie, is that I don't know about you, but the engineers that I speak to, they say, go and do project management for a project or a year. And the one thing that I find is every engineer after that project pretty much goes, hell no, send me back on the tools. Like, I'm done.
It's a really hard job. I think that, you know, supervisors and project managers don't get enough credit for what they do. They have to deal with all of the mistakes, everybody else's mistakes as well as their own mistakes, and they have to deliver the job at the end of the day regardless of what happens. You know, it's such a stressful job. And I remember my instructor at in school at first year, he said to me, you know, yeah, project managers, you know, it's a good position to end up in, but you don't get any sleep.
No, yeah.
You don't get any sleep, and that's something that has stuck with me and something that I've become acutely aware of in the last 6 months. So, you know, I try and be mindful of that when I see, you know, what project managers have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think with Instagram especially, it's so easy to just post the highlights, or you just want to show off what's good.
Yeah.
But and I call bullshit on everyone who says, oh, my job site has none of the problems that your job site has. It's like, don't kid yourself. Every job site has its problems because you have to deal with so many different trades. Unless you're working on a tiny job where it's just you and yourself, like it's, you are going to have those problems because there is so much that is outside of your control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that message sometimes gets lost. At the end of the day, it's nice to see that the end result, but what did you have to go through to get there?
Oh, right. Pulling teeth, losing hair, losing friends, losing sleep. I think you said, I can't tell you the amount of nights I've gone to bed worrying about whether I've over-ordered concrete and there's, you know, going to be a huge cost to the job. And that's all part of the, I think you start to worry less the older and more experienced you get, but it never leaves you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So like the last job, we had to scramble to get these automatic doors installed. There were three of them that had to go in, and there were like six different trades that had to get involved to make it all happen. And my job was literally just to stand there and make sure that it all got done before final inspection the week after. Yeah. And I remember that week I was so stressed. I had hair, literally I was washing my hair. My hair was falling out, like clumps of it in the shower. And I was like, I can't believe this is happening to me. I didn't think I would ever end up in this place, you know.
Yeah.
The stress that you don't even feel day to day, it catches up to you.
Yes.
And it becomes like, you know, like your hair falling out or losing weight or putting on weight or whatever it is. It manifests in you physically by the end of it. So,
but
you know what? The upside of that is I learned a lot from that experience, and I now know what we need to do in advance to have that not happen again on the job that I'm currently working on. So I have it on my list. We need to put backing in for the automatic door operators. So the guy shows up on site.
Yeah,
make sure they electricians to run all their wires and not having to do it at the last minute. It was a big learning curve for all of us, you know, like not a lot of, you know, often you get electricians or plumbers or whoever who've worked in simply, you know, one type of setting. They'll only work in residential settings, and then suddenly they get thrown into a commercial job and you can't blame them for not knowing what to expect, you know. So and it just is what it is sometimes.
And I think it's important for people to understand that with construction is it's not about, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's. 9 times out of 10, you know, drawings, you'll never build to the exact drawing. Like you say, nothing will ever go to plan one day. Sometimes things do go to plan. And I think if you can learn the skill of being able to cope in those situations and high stress environments, then it really sets you up for, well, lots of different aspects in life, you know, things that come along that you can't control. So I think working in construction, while sometimes I feel like I'm going to end up in a mental institute, it's kind of helped me.
Well, with that said, I think that I've realised over the last, you know, couple of years, so at some point along the way, I've realised that construction is not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the beginning, I was so, like, amazed by, you know, what I had, you know, where I'd ended up and what I was doing with my life, that I was like, you know what, this is so amazing. I wish more people were aware that this was an option for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was all like, you know, well, everybody should try it at least, you know, maybe give it a go at some point. But I realized along the way that it's not for everybody, whether you're a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm.
It does take a certain type of person to stick it out. And I think the biggest factor is resilience.
Yeah.
You have to be resilient. There is so much that goes down day to day that affects you on a personal level.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why a lot of people would just, you know, call it quits, because it is stressful. There, at the end of the day, like if your idea of job satisfaction is, you know, things going well day to day and being rewarded for it financially, you won't get that in construction. It's like you have to really be, you either love it and you're passionate about it, or it's just a job for you and you just check out.
Yeah, and like you say, you especially, you know, if you're a woman on site and you are going to come across situations in your career that are going to be tough, like you say, I think you have to be fully committed and in it in the long haul, because if you're not sure, then it's most likely not a job for you.
Yeah.
But then the other side of things, I'd say to stick it out as well. I know I always say that all the time. I'm like, but stick it out. I suppose you have to listen to your gut instinct.
Well, I've spoken to a few other women who have had a really hard time in the job that they've been in. And I think often they're working on much bigger job sites in more sort of rural settings where the vibe is perhaps a little different. And when you're on a camp like that, I've never been on one myself, but I think it would be the last place that I would recommend anyone, especially a woman, to go into if they're just looking to start out, because I think it would really wear you down. The environment at the beginning has to be somewhat supportive for you to want to stick it out. You have to see that hope for the future, and that's going to be really hard to find in a camp or rural type setting. So, you know, I think where you choose to start out from is really important in setting yourself up for the rest of your career, and focusing on not losing sight of the bigger picture is also really important, because it's so easy day to day to just get lost in the details and fighting with all the little things that you have to worry about day to day, and losing sight of what it is that you're really trying to do at the end, the vision, the overall vision of the project, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, Ellie, you need to be a mentor, because I think that's something that I've never given advice on, but that's kind of a perfect bit of advice there for anyone joining the industry, is really think about where you start. I just say to people, well, go and find an apprentice and get a job, but the reality is there needs to be a bit of thought in it. And like you said, your journey has shown that. So that's an amazing bit of advice there for anyone looking to get into the industry. So thanks for that. And that's, it's very insightful.
And you know what? It's also awesome that these platforms now exist to connect, you know?
Right, exactly.
When I started out 4 years ago, I didn't have Instagram. I didn't know anybody who worked in the trades, and it was nerve-wracking. So, you know, now that these platforms exist and hopefully, you know, with the will and the right sort of push in the right direction, you'd have a lot more women who are at least become aware that the opportunity is there. Sure. There are people who will point you in the right direction and will give you a hand to the best of their ability. And, you know, it's don't forget about us. Don't forget about the industry. It's something that I think more and more women will think about in the future too, hopefully. Especially with the incentives and the grants that the government has been given out to push more women into the trades.
This has been amazing. I mean, I could talk on for hours, but I won't take too much of your time. But I do have one final question, if you don't mind, and that's just, you know, your passion shows through Instagram. But if you were sat in front of a group of women or girls now that were thinking, I quite fancy, you know, either starting an apprenticeship or starting the route to become a carpenter, what would you say to them?
Oh geez.
Yeah, I've put you on the spot there, right?
You know what? I've never had that opportunity. That's actually really, I would love to be able to meet with even like primary school aged, elementary school aged boys and girls.
Yeah.
And I want to ask them, what do you want to know mm-hmm. about working in construction? What are you scared of? What is it that you don't know? Mm-hmm. What questions do you have that I could answer for you that would make your decision easier as when the time comes for you?
Yeah.
Because that never happened to me. When I was growing up, nobody ever talked about working in the trades. It was sort of like a last resort. And I think in many ways it still is. So changing that whole idea of, you know, well, you know, apprenticeships are only for people who didn't get good enough grades to go to university, that yeah. whole kind of mentality needs to change.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
so
an interesting one.
I'll turn that around and say, well, I'd like to have to ask the question first. What yeah. do you want to know? And what can I do to help you get there?
Okay, well, let me just put because I'm interested. I mean, I'm not going to career change just yet, but so I'm interested. Like, I see your videos, and you know, there's some. It's your job is more physical than mine. You know, using tools, but also I say heavy equipment and moving things around, the physical side of things. And I don't want to stress too much on that because I know everyone goes that direction when they talk about women being on site, whether we're physically capable, but. That is something that did cross my mind before I entered the industry. Is that something you've ever struggled with, or is it not even an issue?
The jobs that I've been on, I'd always get in there and do it even if I wasn't asked to. And there is this kind of expectation that you will get in there and do it,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, everybody has their limits. Whether you're a man or a woman, you have your physical limits. There are things that I can do physically that my coworker can't, mm-hmm. and vice versa. And we each have strengths and weaknesses that we bring to the job, regardless of your gender or whatever. It's like I think the part to focus on is what can you bring to the table as an individual, as opposed to what can you do as a woman or what can you do as a man that she can't do or he can't do.
Got it.
So physically there are things that I know where my limits are. My boss knows where my limits are. And where I lack in terms of muscular endurance or strength, I make up for in other ways. I can fit into spaces that a lot of my coworkers can't.
I like that.
That's a perfect point.
That's a definite plus.
Yeah, and being more physical fitness does factor into it. You don't have to be like a triathlete to do well in construction, but just the, if it means that you have to take 5 trips back and forth as opposed to 2 where you're struggling,
mm-hmm.
then that's fine. Like everybody has their way of doing things. And I think you're not going to get someone giving you a hard time for doing it the way that you find is best for you in terms of what you're capable of doing in your limitations.
Yeah.
So yeah, I personally have not found that to be an issue at all.
That's good. That's a nice way of putting it. And I've asked that question before. I think it was to Steph when I was talking about her work on site, and she was saying, "Well, look, if you actually do things properly, no one, you know, man or woman, should be lifting things that they're, you know, physically not capable of doing." So that's, I guess, an old mentality of being on site when they used to throw bricks around and carry them on their shoulders.
Yeah.
The reality is, on a construction site, there's help as well.
Absolutely. If it's too heavy for me to carry, it's too heavy for anybody to carry.
Yeah.
I mean, like the limit or whatever is like, I don't know, minimum, like max 100 pounds or something like that. I'm not sure what the numbers are, but, you know, it's not something so ridiculous that you feel like you can't do the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it then. That question's been answered. So there's no excuse for anyone out there thinking the physical side of things.
And it really comes down to you wanting to do the job.
Yeah.
You know, like, it is a part of the job. It's not like something that you can totally avoid. But if you're passionate about the job, it really is a no-brainer. Like, you don't even think twice about the fact that lumber needs to be moved from the second floor up to the fourth floor. You know what I mean? It's just what you need to do to get the job done.
Awesome. And take it now, I see that you have kind of graduated. You're no longer an apprentice, am I right?
Yes, I now have my ticket. I've finalised everything I need to do to get my red seal. So
sweet.
No longer an apprentice, at least on paper.
Yeah, well, congratulations. That's been one hell of a journey.
Thank you.
And
should it has be been.
Be proud. Yep. Yeah.
Just 4 years of my life.
Oh, it's been awesome. Thank you so much, Ellie. I've really enjoyed chatting with you today, and my listeners, I know, are going to take so much from this interview and general chat. So, yeah, I just want to say thanks so much, and I'm going to point everyone in the direction of your Instagram and anything else that you have, and let's up your following of fellow women out there, because you just give so much, and I'm really appreciative of that.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
No,
I appreciate
it. No problem at all. Thank you very much. I am going to just kick back to the start because I didn't do an intro. So we're going to fake an intro if that's cool with you.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, no worries. Hello and welcome to This Is A Man's World. And today my guest is Ellie. She's a carpenter from Australia but working in Vancouver. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
There we go. All done. Nothing like doing, it's like construction. You do you do what should be done at the start, at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect ending.
Exactly. Right, awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time, Ellie. I really appreciate it. And I wish you all best for the end of the day. And we'll keep in touch via Instagram. I know it's so hard when you're working to, you know, keep in contact with people.
I'm terrible. I log off for days at a time, and that's the only way that I deal with it, because I find it, like you, I follow too many people, and it's just overwhelming, and I feel this like sense of obligation to keep up with everybody on Instagram, and I don't, and I feel bad, so I just like disconnect entirely, and I'm just like, fuck it.
No, I'm like, I'm like, oh my god, on site the whole time, like amazing long stories, and then I feel bad, and then I'm like, do you know what, I'm not even going to bother posting this half-assed like story that won't even make sense to people, and that's why I like doing the podcast, because it really makes me sit down and talk and share that way. So it's hard to come away from Instagram, but then I look at it, I'm like, well, how do people post like constantly all day long?
I know,
and the reality is they're probably not like me, just sat drinking tea all day, but there we go, won't go into that.
You have a gift for this, Michelle. Like, I think that the way that you conduct the podcast is really engaging.
I'm
going to encourage you to keep doing it, because you're obviously reaching the audience that you need to reach, that you're hoping to reach.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
Sometimes Instagram isn't the best platform for things like that, you know? It's certainly niche-driven.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And the goal is, you know, if I can just encourage one, you know, if there's just one person listening out there that says, you know what, I'm gonna give it a go because I've listened to a guest who, you know, they're inspired to follow, then the work's done. So thanks very much. Yeah, that gentle encouragement is always needed.
And you know what? It's something that people can listen to while they're working.
Sure.
I've got up to a podcast that I can listen to while I'm at work. And actually, you know what? Now that I mention it, I couldn't find your podcast. I had to find it at a YouTube. Is it on, like, is there, do you find it usually on it's like what name does it fall under?
Yeah, so it's This Is a Man's World, She Who Dares Wins, but it is on every platform. I need to put a I'm going to put a link on Instagram on my main bio so that people can go directly to it. But it's on Anchor, it's on Spotify, it's on iTunes. Wow. Yes.
Oh, I just found it. Yes, I see it. Okay, because I have it on Spotify, so I looked it up on Spotify and I couldn't find it. But when I put in She Who Dares Wins, it's just come up now, so that's perfect.
Yeah, I did a bit of a poll on Instagram because I started This Is a Man's World, She Who Dares Wins, and then some people were getting confused by it because obviously it says This Is a Man's World. So I'm kind of separating it at the moment, and This Is a Man's World is me, my work on site, and the She Who Dares Wins is more the community. So that's coming. Hopefully it will be a little bit easier for people to identify with. But that's cool if you found it. Yeah, every platform.
Yeah.
And now that this is the second season, I think it will basically, the platforms that it's on, roll out to the majority of them so people can find. So, yeah, I'm glad you found me and I'm glad I found you.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
You're
so motivating. It's fabulous to meet someone who knows what goes on, who knows the reality, you know.
Yeah.
I get so much criticism from other dudes who tell me that I'm doing it wrong, or that my boss is a loser, or that you know, like, there shouldn't be these problems on a job site. And I'm just like, this is ridiculous, because you know, I'm not afraid to talk about the problems.
Yeah.
And you know, this is just the reality of how it is. And I think that the more women that do get into construction, the more that this becomes less of a problem. Because like you said, there are things that I think we have that we bring to the table that perhaps is lacking in men, and vice versa,
yeah.
Like attention to detail and organizational skills, you know. So it'd be nice to see a little more diversity in the trades.
Exactly.
Hope we'll get there.
Yeah, hopefully. And I think by just having these conversations, we're slowly chipping away and helping.
I think so too. I mean, it's like a long-term thing, right? It's hard to see the progress day to day, but you know, perhaps in several years' time, we'll see the fruits of the labour.
Yeah, let's hope so. And they'll be just saying, oh, those old girls didn't know what they were talking about. There's nothing to talk about now. The industry is pretty much balanced. I hope that's the case.
Yeah. Alrighty. All right. Well, I'll let you go. Have a good day.
You
I don't
too.
Know what time it is over there, but I think I'm going to go back to bed.
Yeah. Thanks so much for early morning. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon here, so I'm off to get a bit of dinner and then relax. Well, I say relax for the evening. Try and entertain an 18-month-old and get into bed. So that'll be my route for the evening.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let me know when you get around to putting it together, and so I can point people in the direction of the interview.
Definitely. I will let you know before we get posted, before your episode goes live. And then, like I say, if you've got any issues, you want to talk about anything else, we can go through that. And then, it'll be open for the masses. So I will be in touch soon.
Okay. Thanks so much, Michelle.
Thanks, Ellie. Take care. Really appreciate it.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Once again, I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to the podcast, folks. Your support means everything. Don't forget to check out the show notes, and I'll be back next week.